I call the meeting of the Wednesday, February 25th, 2026, House Veterans and Military Affairs Division to order. A quorum is present. We begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States. Representative Duran, would you like to lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin our agenda, I want to remind everyone the committee chair maintains control of this hearing, and I have the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak to the sergeant staff identified by their gold ties. Thank you. Sorry. Saving paper. Troopers, house, and security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it, as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Representative Ray Brower, have you had the chance to review the minutes? All right. Representative Ray Brower moves the approval of the February 18th, 2026 minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes of the February 18th, 2026 meetings are approved. The first bill is House File 3540. That's my bill. Vice Chair Olson, would you please take the gavel?
All right, Mr. Chair, would you like to move House File 3540 before the division with a recommendation that it is re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Law, Civil Law Committee?
Yes.
There's a couple of amendments with your bill. I believe A1 amendment's yours. We're not going to be offering that one today. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. While it is a very important addition to the bill, we need to tighten up the language to ensure it accomplishes what we want.
Excellent. So the A1 amendment has been withdrawn. Mr. Chair, would you like to introduce your bill before we move on with further amendments?
Sure. This bill was something I drafted or had drafted for me. Last year I received a couple of phone calls from people in the state that were having issues with their employment and housing due to their veteran status. It was clear discrimination because they were veterans, and I was very surprised to find out that veterans was not a protected class in the Human Rights Amendment or Human Rights Department, and I added this, or want to add it, so that's what this bill does.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is another amendment. I believe it was going to be from Representative Lee, and seeing he is not here, Mr. Chairman Zhang, would you like to move the amendment or find someone to do so?
I will move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Excellent. Co-Chair Zhang has moved the A2 amendment. Would you please describe the amendment for the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It basically just adds the veterans of the Secret War in Laos to be included in the bill.
Chairman Bliss, do you have any comments on this amendment?
It's a friendly amendment. I would request a yes vote. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. All right, Mr. Chair, you introduced your bill already. We've got some testifiers here, so unless you have anything further, I would like to have Nick Slade could come up and testify with John Kelly in reserve, ready to go. All right, sir, would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicholas Slade. I am the Deputy General Counsel for the Department of Military Affairs. And let's see here. All right. I realize that Amendment 1 has not been brought forward, but we do want to go on the record as being very supportive of Amendment 1. One of the problems that we as members of the National Guard face is that unless we deploy to active duty, we don't necessarily meet the federal definition and actually some of the state definitions for veterans. So because our drill time and our annual training don't qualify as federal service, we don't necessarily trigger the federal veterans. And as, you know, we're the state forces, we're serving the state, should be taking care of us. And so the Amendment 1, we want to be on record as supporting. One of the other things that we wanted to bring to your attention is, because we're talking about protections and discriminations that occur, is that the protections under Minnesota law for secondary education are, we want to point out a problem that we're facing in that when we're called to active duty, or and particularly this has come up a couple times, both for the state active duty and for annual training, is that we have students who have to miss part of their education. And as part of that, they are offered the opportunity to withdraw, in particular, some of the programs that are two-year, and what I would call sort of linear continual programs for certificates, where each class builds on the next class, and it's a certificate program that often doesn't offer the class again until a year later. So if our troops, our Guard members have to pull out of the class or miss multiple classes, they may be forced to either withdraw from the program or wait a whole another year before they complete it. And so we'd like to raise that issue with and put that on your radar. Because it has been reoccurring. It happened. I had one soldier just last current deployment for state active duty, and while we were able to, we tried working with the school, we ultimately had to release him early from active duty and return him so that he could complete the program. But he ended up missing two weekends. And it was a bit of a struggle, and we had to really twist the arms of the school to try and get it. So we would like to work with you on toughening up our educational protections. With that, if there's any questions, I would be happy to take them.
Excellent. Are there any questions for Mr. Slade? Seeing no questions, Representative Feist looks like she's contemplating a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know. I'm having more questions for myself, and asking them out loud will show.
So you're having a good conversation with yourself.
Yeah, right. I was just trying to think. Like, I was just thinking through what you were just sharing, and I was just thinking, like, sometimes it just might be really hard for an academic institution, like you were talking about missed practicums, and so I was just thinking, like, about reasonable accommodations and what can they do and what what they should do in a situation where there isn't, like where whatever the program is just can't accommodate just due to the nature of what they're studying. And so then I was thinking to myself, and this is where I should definitely know the answer, I was just like, would the veteran then be able to sue the institution? And I was thinking, well, that's not like a great scenario. It feels like that's not what we're going for. So anyway, those were the thoughts that I was having in my head. And if you have any thoughts on those, I'd appreciate them.
Mr. Slade.
Mr. Chair, Representative Feist. Yes, one of the things that that one of the differences between the current state protections and the federal protections, which again don't kick in firstly for 30 days, but also you have to be going on to federal status, so they wouldn't cover us when we're doing state active duty. But one of the major differences, and I put it in the slide, I didn't go through it earlier, but the federal standard is that it has to impose an undue hardship on the school. It puts some burden on the school to work with the student to try and come up with extra tutoring or whatever. And unless it causes an undue hardship on the school, they're required to do it. There is there really isn't a right to sue so much, but under the federal statute, because some of the educational funding federal educational funding is also tied. I think they probably run the risk of losing it. I'm not 100% sure on that, but in my review of the federal law, there didn't look to be a right of action.
Any further follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. That's helpful. I think that like undue burden standard seems very reasonable to me. And so are you saying that basically in passing this, we would be kind of taking that federal standard and bringing it to the state level by incorporating this into the Human Rights Act?
That would be my choice. My hope is that by bringing in the federal standard, which our current standard sort of reads as, reasonable accommodations, that's kind of a low, and a lot of these are, sort of flexible. But by adding, making it an undue hardship, it puts a little bit more burden on the school and the community to work with and help our guard members.
So to shed a little bit more light on the subject, we have House Nonpartisan Research, Mary Davis, with the answer.
Chair and members, Mary Davis with House Research. I would just follow up on what you were saying because I think it would create a little bit more education for those higher ed institutions, so they would be maybe learning to work with students in advance because the state law would require them to work with students, not to discriminate against current students or students that are seeking to enroll in the program. They can't exclude them and they can't discriminate against them. So it might create more information in that area about working with students. And then the Minnesota Human Rights Act does have that administrative process. So it's not necessarily a lawsuit, but they could use that administrative process, which has a much lower barrier than getting into court. It doesn't cost money and it's less litigious, if that makes sense.
Any further comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to our next testifier, John Kelly. Good morning, sir. Would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Good morning, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3540. If this bill is passed into law, Minnesota would join five other states that have added veteran or military status as a protected class under state-level non-discrimination statutes. So California has veteran or military status in the Fair Employment and Housing Act. Massachusetts has status of a veteran in the Unlawful Discrimination Because of Race, Color, Religious Creed, National Origin, Ancestry, or Sex statute. Ohio has military status in unlawful discriminatory practices. Virginia has military status in the Virginia Human Rights Act. And Washington has honorably discharged veteran or military status in the Discrimination Human Rights Commission. Additionally, Minnesota State added veteran status to their Policy 1B Equal Opportunity, Non-Discrimination, and Employment and Education policy in June of 2022. This update to the Minnesota Human Rights Act furthers the interests of veterans and provides them additional protection under state law. This is a great addition to the existing ecosystem of support for veterans and those still currently serving. We would encourage support. I will also note anecdotally, we're talking about the education piece. I'm not a doctor, but I did go to undergrad for 7 years because I was in the National Guard during that time. And I was lucky that I had some pretty understanding professors. So I think it's worthwhile that the committee is kicking the tires on that. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
With that, are there any questions for the testifier or for Chair Bliss? Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Bliss, I'm just curious, do you know why veterans were not included in the Human Rights Act?
I have no idea. I wasn't around when it was created. Again, I was surprised that it wasn't. Like I said, two constituents had contacted me. I told them to go to the Human Rights Administration, and they said that they did, and it wasn't included. So I have no idea why they left it out initially.
Do we have anyone from the Human Rights Department here? Okay. That's it. Cheers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Zhang, just a note for you, they will be in Judiciary where the next committee stop is for this bill. So, House Research?
Chair and members, the Minnesota Human Rights Act is actually one of the oldest human rights acts in the United States. The earliest ones only had a couple of protected classes in it, and they added protected classes like slowly over time. So it's been redrafted and recodified a number of times since the 1960s.
Any further questions, comments, or concerns? All right. With that, Chair Bliss, would you like to finish up the bill?
Yeah, thank you. It's just correcting an oversight, in my opinion. I think it's really needed that we recognize veterans in this way and protect them.
Perfect. Chair Bliss renews his motion that House File 3540, as amended, is re-referred to the Judiciary Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The motion prevails. And the bill is on its way to Judiciary. And I will get out of this seat and give it back to the rightful owner.
The next bill on the agenda is House File 3522. Representative Duran, please come to the testifier table with your testifier. Representative Duran, would you like to move House File 3522 before the division with a recommendation that is re-referred to the General Register?
I do, Chair.
Please begin your testimony.
Good morning, chairs and committee. Thank you for allowing me to introduce House File 3522. House File 3522 is a Department of Veteran Affairs policy bill focused on federal conformity. The bill creates a new subsection in the Veteran Home Statutes that allows for additional procedures and unlikely events that a Minnesota veteran's home must be temporarily closed due to a federal involuntary termination notice. In addition to the statute, is necessary for Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs to be compliant with the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services and Minnesota Department of Health and requirements. Currently, under Minnesota law, the Department of Veteran Affairs must not close a veteran's home unless the legislator passes a law authorizing them to do so. Under MDVA's current closure plan, the department would either need to go to the legislator to fast-track a bill during session or ask the governor to call a special legislation. This creates a conflict with the U.S. Code of Federal Regulations, which requires homes to close quickly in order to do so after a immediate jeopardy tag from the CMS. This proposal adds a clause authorizing the closure of the specific circumstances under all residents are moved to a suitable location so all 8 Minnesota veteran homes are compliant. I would now like to turn it over to my testifier, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Veteran Affairs.
Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Again, for the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you, Representative Duran, for agreeing to carry this bill for the department and for the committee for taking the time to hear the bill this morning. As mentioned by Representative Duran, House File 3522 creates a new subsection in Minnesota Statutes 9801, allowing for additional procedures in the unlikely event
that a veteran's home would have to be closed due to involuntary termination notice. I want to be crystal clear that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has no intention of closing any of its facilities across the state. The need for this statutory update came out through the course of our regular cadence of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, surveys this past August. This past August, we were informed that we must have a closure plan to be in compliance with federal law. Even though under Minnesota statutes, the commissioner may not close a state veteran's home without the legislature passing a law authorizing to do so. So on our current closure plan, we have to go to the legislature or ask the governor to call a special session. So we did get into compliance with after the survey, and we have a policy, which is a requirement under the law, but that the first steps of that policy are extremely challenging and are pretty much dependent on the eye of the surveyor if that's a satisfactory plan. So we worked with MDH this interim on this language to make sure that we would be in future compliance and not be getting future tags. They are good with the language as presented before the committee today, and the department respectfully asked for the committee's support on this bill so that we can just get our statutes updated and move on. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Representative Duran or his testifier? Chair Jung.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Kelly or Representative Duran, can you share with me why is it in statutory for a closure of a veteran homes that the legislature has to approve it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The legislature passed that law, I believe, in the 2014 or 2015 session. There was talk at the time of potentially the closure of the Hastings Domiciliary Facility, and the then chairs of the Veterans Affairs Committees decided to put that into law, is my understanding of the history. And we aren't trying to wade into that. We just think, you know, if the legislature deemed that, we just want the ability to close and move the residents in a safe manner and be in compliance. This is a very unlikely event. Even if we were to receive an involuntary closure notice, we would be allowed to take a number of steps to avoid this actually happening. So this is really us being able to kind of tick a box and not have our statutes contravene the federal regulations.
Anything further? Any other questions? All right. Seeing no more questions, Representative Duran, do you have any closing remarks?
No, Chair, just thank you for hearing the bill today. And since this is an agency bill, there is no cost to it, just to let everybody know. So,
Representative Duran renews his motion that House File 3522 is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. And House File 3522 is re-referred to the General Register. The final bill on our agenda is House File 3544. Representative Rapinski, please come to the testifier table with your testifier. Representative Rapinski, would you like to move House File 3544 before the division with a recommendation that it is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Finance Policy?
Thank you, Chair Bliss. Good morning, fellow representatives. I would like to move House File 3544 before the committee and recommend that this bill is re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you. Please begin your testimony.
House File 3544 is the Department of Veterans Affairs housekeeping and federal conformity bill. It cleans up sections of several of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs chapters of law and adds provisions to ensure federal conformity. The bill allows for the reclassification of the current chief of staff position on the Deputy Commissioner of Administration. This title and structure modernization is better reflect responsibilities of the position that leads the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Central Office Division and preserves the veteran deputy requirement. The bill also cleans up outdated statutes and ensures that the MDVA funds and programs are channeled towards eligible individuals who have not forfeited their rights to federal benefits under U.S. Code 38, Chapter 61. By aligning state benefits, services, and programs with federal forfeiture determinations, the portion of the bill ensures a more consistent and fair distribution of resources in a tight fiscal environment. Periodic updates to outdated state law allows for a clearer reading of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs statutes and for the state veterans population, including spouses and dependents. I would now like to turn it over to my testifier, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Kelly, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Good morning again, and thank you, Representative Rapinski, for agreeing to carry this bill for the department and for the committee for taking the time to hear this bill this morning. As mentioned by the author, House File 3544 cleans up sections of several of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs chapters of law and adds provisions to ensure federal conformity. This bill also allows for the reclassification of the Chief of Staff position to the Deputy Commissioner of Administration. Under the current organizational structure, the Chief of Staff leads the MDVA Central Office Division, which is equivalent in leadership complexity to the MDVA Healthcare Division overseeing a comparable number of director-level supervisors. The Chief of Staff oversees facility management of the Department's 71 buildings covering 1.6 million square feet, the General Counsel and Legal Services Office, Human Resources Management for an agency with over 1,800 staff members, the Chief Financial Officer and Financial Services Team overseeing the over $200 million budget of the department, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Accessibility Team, Government Relations, Communications, Public Relations, Minute at MDVA Chief Business Technology Officer, and the Internal Controls Team. This title change aligns the MDVA with other agencies of similar size and ensures parity among division leaders, strengthening organizational clarity and authority while also maintaining the requirement that any deputy commissioner at MDVA be an American citizen and a veteran of the armed forces. The Deputy Commissioner of Administration reclassification would provide clear operational leadership and stronger support to the commissioner as MDVA navigates an increasingly complex healthcare and program and service delivery challenges. If this bill becomes law, Minnesota veterans and their families will benefit from the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs having a modernized leadership team. Additionally, periodic updates to outdated state law allows for a clearer reading of MDVA statutes for Minnesota veterans population as well as spouses and dependents. As part of the department's efforts to clean up its statutes, this bill contains two repealers. It repeals Minnesota statutes 196.19 to 196.26, otherwise known as the Environmental Hazards and Information and Assistance Act. This was passed in the early 1980s as Minnesota grappled with the devastating effects of Agent Orange and other chemical agents in our veteran population. In the more than 40 years since this became state law, there have been numerous pieces of federal legislation recognizing chemical agents in our veterans population. The impact on service members and illnesses relating to them have been addressed in the Agent Orange Act of 1991, the Blue Water Navy Act of 2019, and the PACT Act of 2022. There is now a long list of illnesses linked to environmental hazards that are now widely recognized as presumptive conditions by the federal VA, and the position that was established at MDVA to effectuate this law has not been filled or active since 2001. It also repeals Minnesota Statutes 197.225, which requires the department to collect and maintain data about Minnesota residents who died from service-connected causes, something the department has never been able to effectuate due to the federal government not allowing for the sharing of this information. These updates, along with the federal conformity portion, will ensure that benefits and programs continue to be available solely for those who have not forfeited the rights to benefits. Should this bill become law, our agency would need to adjust and accommodate for the changes. As the department is currently tasked with overseeing state-funded initiatives for veterans and former armed service members, including healthcare and education assistance, we will review our policies and eligibility criteria for benefits, services, and programs. We will also collaborate with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to maintain updated information on affected individuals who have forfeited their benefits. MDVA is confident in our ability to integrate these changes within our existing framework without undue strain. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs respectfully asks for the committee's support, and with that, I'm ready to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Representative Rapinski or the testifier? Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I maybe I'm forgetting something, but I thought that the housekeeping federal conformity was already done in a previous housekeeping bill that I carried maybe last year even. Can you shed some light on that?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Olson, are you speaking to the forfeiture provisions?
Yeah.
Chair, Representative, our understanding is that that was in conference committee, but it did not make it into the final passage of the bill. And so we think it's a good bill, and we are bringing it back. And that was in the 24 session, I believe.
Mr. Kelly, I was just going to say, what brain child did that? But I guess that would have been me, and I don't know why it didn't get included.
Mr. Chair, I was going to say I wasn't on that committee, so the conference committee, so I blame you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Representative Davis?
Nice shot. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelly, are we growing government here or increasing state budget at all?
Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, no. So this is a change in title, not compensation or anything like that. We are just modernizing the leadership team at the department in terms of that. So there's parity among the division leaders.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for that clarification.
Representative Rupinski, closing remarks.
Thank you for hearing my bill today. I renew my motion to recommend that House File 3544 is re-referred to the Health Committee.
Representative Rupinski renews his motion that House File 3544 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries and House File 3544 is re-referred to Health. Presenting today, the final agenda item is presentation by the Commander's Task Force. And presenting today is Stuart Mednick, CTF Chair and Commander of the Jewish War Veterans, and Barry Hendrickson, VFW Adjutant and Quartermaster. When you're ready, please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Stuart Mednick. I am the commander of the Minnesota Department of the Jewish War Veterans. I am here today to talk about the Commander's Task Force. Before I do, I want to tell you just a little bit about who I am, if I may. Active duty in the U.S. Navy Submarine Force. I've held a top secret clearance because I worked on nuclear submarines and worked with nuclear ballistic missiles. Government trusted me. I was 9 years active duty. I made 4 deployments during my active duty, spent 6 years at sea or overseas. I am honorably discharged, a very decorated veteran, including a letter of commendation from Governor Arne Carlson during my time in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And that's something I am very proud of, my service. The Cold War ended, and that's when I ended my service because I was a Cold War sailor. I am also the chair of the Commander's Task Force. Can I please see a show of hands who are familiar with what the Commander's Task Force is? Almost everybody, but not everybody. So please let me explain a little bit about who we are. We are comprised primarily of the 8 commanders of the congressionally chartered veteran service organizations. That includes the Veterans of Foreign War, American Legion, Jewish War Veterans, Disabled American Veterans, Paralyzed Veterans of America, AMVETS. I know I'm missing someone, but you get the idea. We meet monthly, and we also engage quite a bit with the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. John is there pretty frequently, so is Cole. We have the commissioner and his staff present. We also have the Minnesota Association of Veteran Service Officers present, the executive director and the president very frequently. And we also have members of the governor's staff. And every quarter, we also have legislators, staffers, congressional delegation. the governor himself, and I'm sure many of you have even attended some of our meetings, and we greatly appreciate all your participation. What we do is we focus on improving veterans, National Guard, reserves, active duties, lives through legislation, social engagement, organizational support, and community activism for those groups who reside here in Minnesota. Holistically, we represent 285,000 veterans statewide across all legislative districts in Minnesota. So I am sure that there are constituents in every district of all of you kind people here today. This April 23rd, a very important date, and I'd ask please everybody please take note, write this down. April 23rd is our Veterans Day on the Hill that we have every year, and it would mean a lot for all veterans across the state if each of you would be able to participate and attend and also tell your constituents and counterparts April 23rd this year to participate, and that would be wonderful. So before I turn over to my associate Barry here, one last question, if I may beg the indulgence of the chair and people here. Show of hands, who are Republicans? Just out of curiosity. Great. How many are Democrats? Okay. How many are Minnesotans? Those are the legislators that we are addressing today. Thank you. I'll turn it over now to Barry.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Barry Henriksen. I'm the Department of Minnesota Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW Adjutant Quartermaster, and Legislative Chair. With the Commander's Task Force, we have one priority this year. Many years we've had several priorities, and sometimes we get a priority, but we don't get our main priority. So this year, we decided to do something different and have just one priority. That doesn't preclude every organization. The VFW will have our own legislative initiatives. So will Jewish war veterans, all of us. But for the Commander's Task Force to approve a priority, it must be unanimous. Every one of us must agree. VFW won't go along with the priority that everyone else backs if we don't. So this year, our one priority is to increase the property tax exclusion for disabled veterans, for 100% disabled veterans, from $300,000 to $400,000, and for 70 to 99% disabled veterans from $150,000 to $200,000. This property tax exclusion has not changed in 18 years. What is $300,000 18 years ago? What would that be today? $450,000. So that benefit has eroded. Over the years, we've had many attempts to get this increased. There was talk of a very small increase, and we held firm. We need something that is legitimate, that benefit that has been given to our veterans that they've earned is not worth nearly what it was. And by having one topic this year, one issue, it's a pass-fail legislative session for the CTF. So the legislature gets a pass or they get a fail. And we hope it's a pass. And we are working on getting this bill authored and getting support. There was a bill last year, and so look for that House file to come. But and obviously, hats on the hill. I know with representatives last year, was watching the 700 veterans, you know, coming up the mall. Could be a little different. Obviously, with security this year, we're going to have to go through the one entry or through the tunnels. But you know what we do in the military, we adapt and we overcome. We will be on the Hill. And I know Representative Olson enjoyed addressing, and you got a rousing cheers. There was nothing but cheers last year in the rotunda. But we appreciate your support, and we look for your support with our bill. And we are here for any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Representative Feist.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Do you know what the fiscal note is for that exemption?
Yeah, so I can tell you right now, thank you, Representative. Trent gave me by county the numbers here. So if you look at the estimated market value, the veterans homestead inclusion, and what that percentage is on a county-to-county basis, Hennepin County, it is 0.21% of the property, total property value. And if you're looking at this, this would be a 33%. So it would be less than a percent of the total of any county. Hennepin's at 0.21, and the highest property tax total is Mille Lacs County at 1.21. Ramsey's currently at 0.31. So it's a very small amount. It will go up slightly, but it's still an extremely small amount of any county's budget. And we've had support from the larger counties. And we're really trying to fight. I think sometimes it's the smaller counties that think it's going to be a more of a burden on them than it is. And we certainly understand that counties are under a lot of pressure. There's pressure everywhere on budgets and finance. But we don't want it to be balanced on the back of the veterans. And this is also, I know the county veterans service officers, this is their CVSO's top priority too this year.
Representative Feist.
Yep, thank you so much for clarifying that. So just to make sure I understand, there isn't really a fiscal note at the state level, the impact, and maybe
so it's county.
I feel like today is my day for asking questions that acknowledge what I don't know. But so there wouldn't be a fiscal note.
No, it's on this it's on the county. There, I know there had been talk about an offset, but I don't see the state.
Okay. Thank you so much for clarifying.
And just, you know, something to put it in perspective, these guys that are 100% disabled, they're not driving Ferraris, they're not making big bucks. These guys are generally struggling day to day, and this is the least we can do for them. And I stated on the floor last time we debated this, they don't hand these 100% disabilities out in a Cracker Jack box. I mean, these guys they deserve it. So any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
The next meeting of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Division will be Wednesday, March 4th, 2026 at 8:15 a.m. There being no further business before the division, this meeting is adjourned.